Woo indeed.
It's another podcast.
It's a great podcast.
Still kicking.
We're doing well. We're starting out fresh. We have energy this week. Last week we were a little sleepy. Sorry about that. This week we're fine. Andrew's not currently eating a full lunch on mic.
Nope.
And
finished it.
And to top all of these good things off with an even better thing, we have a guest. This is truly a treat. We have not heard from this friend for, I want to say, a year and a half, which is honestly negligent on our part because we so enjoyed her the last time she was here. But you know her as stand-up comedian, actress, podcaster, all-around delight, Sydney Washington. Welcome back.
Hello. It's been a long time, and I'm glad to be back in these circumstances.
Yes. Thank you.
The best circumstances. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're all living the best times we've ever been through, I feel.
Well, the first time I came on your podcast, I was actually able to, like, you know, give you a hug and like see you, and now we're zooming.
Yeah.
We're zoom, 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 you know?
I'm going to go ahead and a little bit speak for Tani here, and though we're all losing our minds and everyone is too alone, I do think the not having the commute to the studio thing has been a bigger silver lining than I expected. Because I'm just like, I will just fully admit, I was napping until literally 1 minute before it was time to start this. So
I didn't want to say anything. I didn't want to go off, you know, but I was mm-hmm. like, I could see something with the bang going.
It was giving me bed hair. I'm a mess. You know? Oh yeah. Yeah. I made coffee like just literally 1 second ago. My shit is a mess. So,
all right, so I said we were doing well. We're doing medium. We are enhanced by Sydney's presence, but yes. You know, I will.
Two thirds of this podcast are doing well today. Two thirds of this podcast are doing great.
Thank you for including me in that. I will say that the trade-off from before, when we used to be able to hug and see each other and speak to each other's faces, now we get the intimacy of seeing into your home. So we learned a lot about Sydney's lighting, her color scheme that she's got going on in her room there. This is a new type of intimacy, and I'm into it.
Well, the only issue I have with this is that I always have to look like my apartment is somewhat clean and like there's not like dishes everywhere and like old socks on top of my tables. Like I have to kind of like straighten up for the guests, you know, for you guys, whenever I'm getting on Zoom.
That's interesting. Now we are the guests for your home and you are the guests for our podcast. And yes. I like that because it puts us on a level playing field.
I was gonna get a charcuterie board out for y'all, and then I was like, darn, they won't be able to have it.
What if you opened up the Zoom and you were just there eating salami, being like, you guys want some?
Yeah, I have done that on a Zoom, and the listeners did not like that because they were like, we can hear you eating. That was in the notes, in the tweets.
In the notes. Mm-hmm. I like that you think of the feedback you get after a pod as notes. That would help me if I were to think of it that way.
That's because she's a professional. Yeah, we don't.
That's true.
You and I don't take notes because we are little children doing this. We don't know what's happening.
Right. Speaking of something that I want to get to later, which is that there's a handful of new listeners to our pod, in which we welcome you and we thank you. But I think it needs to be said that we are not the news. I'll come back to this. So, speaking of not being the news, Sydney, I remember your old pod, The Unofficial Expert, said it nice in the title, was that you're an expert, but not really. I feel like we need some of that for our show. So you're still doing Unofficial Expert, and you're also doing Hobby Hunters. Is this where you are looking for a new hobby?
Yes, it's called Hobby Hunter. Just one, because it's just me. but yeah, I have a lot of time on my hands, and I could have written, you know, 12 scripts by now, but I'm still here diddly-daddling, willy-nilly with my time, even though I just turned 36. It's like, okay, bitch, like, what are you doing? but yeah, I'm listening to people talk about their new hobbies that they found while being in quarantine, and it's actually, it's cool, because I was like, oh, wow, these people are not depressed. You know, like, it's just great to talk to people who have motivation to do something, you know?
Sure. Or we are depressed, but we're able to run from that through a series of small tasks. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's what it is. That's exactly what it is.
Some denial. We love denial.
What's a hobby that you've found that you could see yourself maybe pursuing post-pandemic?
So someone came on, actually Amir, who is one of the creators of HeadGum, was like, he's been collecting basketball cards for years, like most of his life. And he said that, the stock went down for the basketball cards like maybe a few years ago, and he kind of like got out of it. But soon as quarantine hit, I mean, the money was rolling in for these cards. And he was saying that it's almost better than Bitcoin, you know, because you can actually trade with these cards on online, and you could sell it for like $400, $1,200. Like, there's people who are really looking for, you know, that one Michael Jordan card that's from, like, I don't know, 1989. Obviously, I wasn't listening to the specifics, but he was saying, like, you can make a ton of money from it. And I actually want to start investing in myself. And maybe basketball cards is the way.
I like this because it sounds less like hobby and more like, I mean, this is how you know you're a true hustler, is you're looking for a hobby and what you latch onto is like a revenue stream.
Yes, yes. In the beginning of the podcast, I get the definition of like what a hobby is. And it basically is you're doing an activity and it's not for like financial gain. But then I'm talking to comedians and they're like, no, everything is about money. I need coins. Like, even if I'm beating necklaces together because I'm running away from my problems, I still want to make money from these necklaces.
Sure.
So it's great to hear when people are like into something that's not just hee hee ha ha, let's make some tweets. And they're also making money from it. So it's great.
Yeah. I'm just going to say, you're one of my favorite Instagram follows. You truly are, because first of all, you are one of the few people, and not to shame anyone, we're all going through our own pandemic moments, but throughout the whole pandemic, I can always count on Sydney to have like a full beat, a cute outfit. Like, you just always look great, and it makes me feel like, there's going to be hope. Like, one day I'll see people and I'll dress up. And you're doing it now, so maybe you're better than me. But it gives me hope for my future that I'll be able to, like, put on outfits and makeup.
It's only because when I get out of the habit of something, I fall all the way off. Like, I wasn't having sex for years. And then when I finally had sex again, I was like, so should we keep the lights on? Like, it just weird shit that it was like, no, you can have sex and turn the lights off. It's nighttime. It's okay. Like, I was just asking weird shit and being awkward. So when we're able to get back out here and gallivant in the streets, I want to be able to, you know, maybe do a cut crease properly, you know, make sure my eyebrows are arched. No, it's not for everybody. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, I have perfected putting rhinestones on my eyelids. Like, I am euphoria down, because when I get out there, I want people to look at my makeup and not the fact that, oh, I have, you know, 28 plants, 2 cats, a lot of top ramen. Like, I'm just trying to deflect the fact of that I have tons of issues. So sure, makeup does help. It does help.
We're all doing it in different ways, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have too many hobbies. I have too many projects. That's how I'm trying to deflect from when something's wrong with me on the inside, is I want to be like, look at all these things I've made, and okay, look at how those are.
No. You're booked, Tony. We see. I mean, if you want to say working is a hobby, you are hobbying it up with the working. That's true. Like, okay, come on, Netflix now.
I am working. I'm grateful to be working. Mm-hmm. I guess you could say that's the biggest hobby of all is trying to be an actor.
Work.
Yes. I agree. I'm not going to lie on that. You're absolutely right. I bought one of those background things for your self-tapes.
Oh, my God. This
I've invested so much money into ring lights now. All of this to, like, nope, still looking. I was like, you know that self-tape I did 3 months ago? The assistant is like, yeah. Yeah, I haven't heard from them. Yeah, it's they're already shooting, girl. I was like, oh, okay.
Oh,
all right.
Okay.
All right. Well, damn. I bought that background. I thought that was really going to really help. It did not.
It is helping you. Look, we don't have to do all shop talk on this show, but look, it is helping you because I have straight up had a casting director say to my face that the reason they didn't send my tape to producers is because my backdrop was wrinkled. Because I had a wrinkled backdrop.
Seriously?
Allow me to get a job. Yes, it's a terrible business. We shouldn't be trying to do
that. That is wild.
So insanity. You are helping yourself. You're at least getting to producers.
Okay. You're right. Hmm. Thank you.
There you go.
I'm trying to think. The few times I've been on the other end, that is wild that that's a piece of criteria because I have never once, like when looking at anyone's tape, been like a little wrinkly back there.
A lot of folks do, though. Yeah.
Damn. That's crazy. But... You know,
because
what?
It's
that's
not
why
all about acting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you go on a date, right? Like you see someone come in and you're already drawn to them and you don't give a hell. You don't give a fuck like what's going on. They probably don't even have a great resume, but you're like, I'm drawn to them. And it's the same thing with casting. Mm-hmm. It's like if they don't want you, they'll be mad about like a little wrinkle. But I know people who've gotten booked. They were not off book. The outfit was wrong. They just, they wanted them up top, you know? So that's why I've given up. I'm like, they already know who they want. they just doing this for protocol reasons now, you know?
Right.
For protocol. Yes, it's depressing. But not as depressing as
ooh.
Racism. That's yes. What I want to talk about, folks. Here we go. Well, we wanted to get into a couple things that have been topics in the news with you, Sydney, and listeners, you know, especially if you're a new listener, the tones of this show, it's real up and down. We're having Ooh. Fun. We're having a great time. We're chit-chatting about the business. Now we got to tell you about some depressing shit. So,
yeah,
you know, buckle up. Sorry for that. This is what it is.
I mean, I think it's like, especially if you're a new listener, it's like you kind of knew that half of the show at least was depressing. That's what we bring to the table. So, yeah, writing down some of the news stuff. I think the main thing that sort of happened in the racism news this week is definitely like fucking Asian people keep getting assaulted, especially in the Bay Area for some reason. It all kind of sounds like it's just sort of like China virus kind of coming back finally. Not that it wasn't, but like it's just like exacerbated and that shit. I don't know if there's like a ton to say about it other than, you know, this is one of those times also that like, because Asian people, I think as people of color, it's like, you know, there's definitely some of us who are like trying to be white and there's definitely some of us who are like not good allies to other people of color. And I don't know if this is the time for me to be scolding those people, but it's like, I'm just saying like when the white people get it into their heads, like this is which side of the line we're on. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I kind of wanted to talk about it because it has felt like there has been a long simmering, you know, we've had a long overdue movement for the recognition of Black lives and of supporting Black people. And I'm kind of like verbally eye rolling a little bit because it feels like we've been doing this about once every 6 months for the last like 5 or 10 years. But, you know, I'm grateful that it happened. But what's kind of left me feeling a little uncomfortable all year, really, is that throughout this, like, huge movement to recognize and to uplift, or at least to say you're recognizing and uplifting Black people, this, like, anti-Asian sentiment associated with the coronavirus has never really gone away. And so now it's almost like, okay, so now we have a new administration. Things have seemingly calmed down a little bit, like of all the mainstream news. So it's almost like, what, now we're able to pay attention to the fact that Asian people are getting beaten up all over this country. And that's, you know, and I'm looking at myself in that too. I'm like, well, what have I been paying attention to all year? And it has not necessarily been stories like this. And it doesn't mean they haven't been happening.
I don't know. I mean, to me, it's like there kind of has to be room for all of it. Because I think that the thing that makes, I don't know, I'm saying the wrong shit at the wrong time about Asian people, I feel like. But because I remember seeing a lot of like especially among the more ignorant parts of Asian Twitter, like in the middle of last year, it's like, shit that was like almost verging on All Lives Matter, kind of like why are we just concentrating on black people? And it's like, damn, motherfuckers. Like, I don't know. I mean, I know everyone gets, a little bit in their head about their own thing, but I don't have that much to say about it. I feel like I'm not saying positive shit, so I probably should shut up.
I think you could do both. Because for me, like, I knew that that was happening because I had a Filipino roommate, like, at the top of the pandemic. And I live in East New York, and she said she was in the train station and someone tried to attack her.
Yeah.
They tried to attack her on the platform. And so, and she was saying like, oh, more and more people that she knows that are like of Asian descent are being, attacked, or just they're saying just undescribable things that you would say to, you don't even know this person. Why are you spitting toward them? It was just insane. So I knew that that was happening and it sucked. Like, but I might have not heard as much as that, as much as I did if I didn't live with someone.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So. I definitely think that we were oversaturated with so much information that some things can fall by the wayside, which another thing is that just comes with social media and access. But that's why it's important that you have to have so many different people in your life to get all of these different corners of the room in terms of information. So, And also, I also had like some Asian friends who family were like All Lives Matter and like these are the black people who are looting, blah blah blah. So like you can have both of those conversations in the same, podcast episode.
We have to often.
seriously. I think that's right. And it is like, I guess for what it's worth, like, now it's like getting a little more oxygen. People can hear about it. And it does feel like it's especially actually like New York and like the Bay Area.
San Francisco, yeah.
Yeah, which feels like it has like a bigger population of like lower class Asian people. And maybe that's why it's like, those people are like more victimizable and there's more public transit and stuff like that. Not that it's not happening in LA. There were definitely like people like a lot of like the MAGA people going to like K-Town and like in LA and like fucking with people and attacking people. I don't know. I
know racists are stupid, but like if you're mad at China, you're going to a place called Koreatown. Like what the fuck are you? You're just admitting that you don't care that there's a difference between the people you're supposedly mad at.
They don't care.
Reason with nonsense.
No, they don't care. Like every time I see these discussions that happen, especially on Facebook, and let me tell you, I'm in a dark place when I'm on these Facebook threads because when you want to know what doesn't make sense, Facebook. That's where you when you want nothing, when no dams are given, you go to Facebook. So I look at these discussions and it's not about learning. They're not, it's not productive. People know damn well that they're wrong. They're loud and wrong, but they're not going to change. So it's like, I'm not running my blood pressure up to the ceiling to tell these people like, you should know better, or why don't you educate yourself, or why don't you ask better questions? I'm not doing that because they know what they're doing. There's a large difference between Filipinos and Koreans. Like, just come on now. Yeah. And also, we had a president who was like calling it the China virus. Like, it was just ignorance spewing at all levels. So, I didn't really expect much from the people. Yeah. I'm sorry, unfortunately, but
I think, that's sort of the thing, I think, because I've been actually having a lot of conversations because I've been writing a couple of things that are like about what it really means to be like Asian, quote unquote, because it's like, it's sort of similar to like blackness, except for the fact of like, people's histories being like taken from them. But because Asian really doesn't, like, to Asian people in Asia, they don't really see themselves as Asian as like a primary thing. Because it's not like, I'm Korean, I'm Japanese, or I'm Filipino, I'm Chinese, whatever. But like really Asian, especially Asian American, just means like you can be called chink, basically. Like that, there isn't really that much more to it other than like ignorant people see you as the same thing. And then, you know, and then in the civil rights era, it became, you know, a little bit more of a like solidarity thing. You know, Asian people are together in this, but it's still reactive to white people, right? It's still just like, all right, I guess we're in this shit together. Our parent, our grandparents, our great grandparents probably didn't like each other very much, but like, all right, I guess we're a team now.
I'm kind of calling an audible. I'm pulling an Andrew, but just because you brought this up, I read. Did you read that interview with Steve Yeun in the New York Times?
I did not yet. You're actually the second person today that's like, yo, did you read this yet?
I don't mean to be like, it's weird that me, that out of the two hosts, I'm the one being like, time for Asian news. But really, just the way you're talking about, just what you're talking about. Anyway, I highly recommend it. Like I said, I'm calling an audible on people, but it was.
Jay Caspian Kang.
Oh. Thank you.
So it's Jay Kang. Jay Kang is he's the one that did probably come out with this, like, he's the strongest for, like, there's no such thing as Asian American.
Yeah. And it's a really cool interview. And, I mean, I love Steve Yeun. I think he's incredible. They were supposed to be talking about Minari, his film, but then mm-hmm. they ended up just talking about, like, being two Korean dudes and how, like, it's a really mm-hmm. fascinating piece. But one of the mm-hmm. pull quotes from it is Steve saying something to the effect of, is being Asian the experience of caring about everyone around you and having no one care about you? And that just like hit me in the chest because it felt, because it's not like I can identify with that, but it just sounded so real and personal that I was like, I don't know. It just kind of,
you can kind of relate to that because that's how some people feel as like women, you know, just like being a woman, you have to understand like, why you have to sympathize with your rapists and understand people who are misogynist and sexist and racist, and you have to have some type of empathy. But then you also have the strength to, like, you have to protect yourself and know better. And why would you go down that alley? And why would you do that to yourself? And why would you get pregnant? So it's like we have to be twice or three times as knowledgeable and compassionate, and then everybody else can just, like, shit on us.
Right. Mm. I feel like that's more apt for what you're saying on it. And maybe, again, I think I just know too many terrible Asian people. So I'm always just like, that's sort of true. But like, I'm related to a bunch of Asian people that definitely don't behave that way. So I don't know.
And I know women that we could throw a bunch of women off the bridge too. So
true. People in general, trash. Like human being, awful, just awful, horrible. Awful. But like that doesn't take away from, you know, I'm trying to be like a more
reasonable
person and just say, hey, for the most part, everyone is kind, you know?
Yeah. I think you're right. I think you're probably right. And probably Steven Yeun is also right. But yeah, I'm trying to think, you know what? We should call the other audible, which is like the fucking Golden Globes.
Do we even have it in us to talk about this? I want to take a brief aside real quick on my thing that I said earlier about how we are not the news. Also, I want listeners, we have a lot of new listeners. Welcome. I'm saying it again. Welcome. We love you. Do you notice how we are struggling to even encapsulate all the things that have happened recently to talk about on this stupid comedy show?
Yeah.
So one, we're not the news. Two, if we don't get to your favorite racism of the week, if you had a favorite racism that you were really hoping to hear about from us and we don't get to it, it's because it's impossible. The world is filled with too many racist occurrences. So just, you know, I'm so sorry we didn't get to your favorite flavor of racism, but maybe you'll find another podcast that does, or maybe you can just read about it your damn self.
If you wanted just a podcast that's just a list of all the most depressing shit that happened in any given week, you've come to the wrongest possible place.
I think that's called Twitter. Just get on Twitter and you'll hear about all the things.
But I do, I mean, you guys can talk about the Golden Globes just a little bit, just because there was the outrage of, you know, what they did to Michaela Cole. Like, you know, I don't want to bash Emily in Paris because, you know, Emily in Paris is, for me, escapism to the T, you know, like I watched that in one whole sitting and I was like, look at this dumb bitch in Paris. Her outfit is trash. Like it just felt light, you know, but at the end of the day, we got to look at a bigger piece of work of art. I May Destroy You and be like, wait, so nobody was like, this needs to be nominated, you know, like that. that in itself is not only just racism, but it's sexist. And also because it is reliving her rape, it's like, oh, this is just too heavy for you. Oh, this is just too much. But it happened. It happened. Like, we cannot look past, like, this is actual factual. And it's just because you want to escape. You know, like the bloggers who want to go to Barbados. It's like, what? Where do the people who live in Barbados go? Where do they go to escape?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Where do the rape victims go when they want to, you know, just chill and veg the fuck out, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up a couple of things that are really important. First of all, I watched all of Emily in Paris, too. And so I wonder. So, well, first, let me say that the I May Destroy You thing, in addition to it being racist and sexist, it also smelled so strongly to me of industry retaliation. We hear enough creepy backroom stories about people getting punished because they pissed the wrong person off in this town. And that I feel so strongly that that is what happened, because there's no way the entire internet, all the articles, everyone's going insane about this. It was like Fleabag times 10,000. Everyone's going, this is the best thing to ever watch. That it gets no nominations. She pissed somebody off. And two, so what do you think, Sydney, about the people who say we should stop, like, kind of hate binging? We should stop watching shows like Emily in Paris if we know they're terrible, because it affects the types of things that get greenlit in the future, and it affects the types of voices that get to make shows.
For me, it's a tough one. It's a tough one because, yes, I want to acknowledge and I want to watch, like, every show that depicts, like, someone's real life and trauma and et cetera. But I will kill myself. Like, I just, I'm an empath, and I will just, I won't go to sleep. I'll worry about these people every day, and it'll really just be hard for me, you know? So I do need a dumb show. I need a dumb show. It's not good. It's not good. I know it's not good. Like, right down to the script, to the outfits, to everything. It was bad, 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 bad. But maybe that was the look. That's what they were going for. So, you know, I do agree that we have to, I think you can hate watch, but I think we also have to promote the things that you actually enjoy watching. Mm-hmm. Like, tweeting about how bad it was, they're still getting the views. You know?
So that's an interesting stance. So maybe hate watch all the shit you want in peace, but don't talk about it.
Don't give tell nobody. But the problem is now nobody has shame. Nobody has shame.
And you hate watch to talk shit. Like, the enjoyment is from talking shit. I mean, I will also just say, like, I don't think, like, the hate watching part, like, changed the numbers of Emily in Paris that much. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. People were tweeting about how bad it was. And then I was like, oh, well, let me watch this shit. But and then I was like, it is bad. Let me keep watching it. And
then my dumb ass about it.
And my dumb ass was like, on Twitter, like, I'm sorry I watched it. Not terrible. Like, just, I am one of the people where I'm like, I'm a fucking dumbass, you know?
I think that's right. But I'm just saying, a lot of, like, easy TV that isn't meant to be, you know, art, or is commerce first, art second, is also like that. You know, you like any like broad network sitcom or whatever, like, those are basically the same goals, right? You put on something that's, like, so palatable, so watchable for whatever reason, who cares if it's, like, ironic or not? Like, you know, studio execs don't fucking care. Like, your eyeball is the same eyeball. I'm just saying, like that shit would have gotten many views no matter what. You know,
I agree with Sydney about the snowball effect, because we are both two people. And look, let me not speak ill of my employer, the great provider, Netflix.com. I love you. I pray at your feet every day. But that show I watched because I watched people dunk on it, and I wanted to see pretty costumes. And I was like, this will be silly. It's not my normal thing, but I'll watch it because everyone's, like, talking about it. But if I hadn't seen people that, like, smart comedy people I know who were not watching it just because it was fun, they were watching it because they wanted to dunk on it.
I'm just saying, that sounds like a show that works on multiple levels to me.
No, that's not true because there's other shows.
I haven't watched it. I should also say
I watched Industry. No, Industry was not. I was doing my best to have Industry trend. I was watching it and posting on stories. I was tweeting, and people were like, "No, this is bad. This is bad. No, this is not a good show." It got a second season, but people were like, "Why? But I was like, "No. You don't like this because you don't like finance." But you don't you don't want to see finance in the gaze of a woman, but also not only a woman, but like a black woman. So that's why you don't like this. You like Wolf of Wall Street because you want to see, oh, this scenario makes sense. So that's why, oh, did I love the script? Did I think Industry was the most amazing show on HBO Max? No, but I think it is a perspective that I don't see enough. And I was like, I'm going to lift this up a little bit more. Not everybody was hot. This is not like the hottest cast. It's not everybody. Not everybody's A-list celeb in it. I was like, you got to give people like this the little alley-oop to like saying yes to Industry might help another show make another perspective that is not just in the white male gaze. Also, the people who wrote it. Two male men. It's just like, fuck, I can't win. But like,
right.
You know, Emily in Paris, did we need to promote it like that? Absolutely not. No way.
We did. It would have done fine on its own, per Andrew's point. We didn't need to hype it up.
To be extra. Here's the thing, actually, going back, actually, Sydney, to the thing you were just saying, which is like, there is a part that's like, because my theory, I guess, of I May Destroy You is that it's like, I mean, first of all, like the Hollywood foreign press people, which is like, that's the Golden Globe voters. It's like a small group of like, we'll call them traditionally pretty racist of the, even for like Hollywood voting bodies, they're like pretty racist. But also it's like, I feel like there's this thing of like, people of color or like whatever like marginalized group really only gets to make the type of art that is like the expected type of art. So, because to me, it's like the Hollywood foreign press isn't like racist in the way that they would never, you know, vote for a black story, but they're like, we just, or a black creator or a black show, but it's like, we just need it to be about black shit in it the most palatable way, about like the civil rights era, about slavery.
And it's when called this drinking was, fountains, and it's about a white man who let a black woman drink out of a drinking fountain.
Yeah. And in this case, when it was like, this is a black story, but it's not the black story that like the dumbest people expect to be the only story. They're like, we don't get it. We don't like it. Whereas Emily in Paris is like one of the white stories that makes sense. And it's like, great, we can co-sign this. This makes sense. This perpetuates the way shit has always been. I think that's sort of my guess to what those people, it's like the type of racism, I guess, is what I mean. Because they're not like Klan member racist. They're just like, we don't get this.
Well, you know what we need to do is take a break. Andrew and I need to watch our careers absolutely get slashed in half. And then I think, Sydney, somehow you're fine. We will not have jobs after this. And then we're going to come back and maybe we'll do a voicemail. We'll keep talking with our guest. So we'll be right back. And we're back. Wasn't that refreshing?
Ooh. I feel good. Ooh, yeah. You probably heard some ads, maybe? We don't know. We don't know what happens between the breaks.
There were ads and whatnot. Let's continue ruining our careers by listening to a voicemail and see what that's about.
Hi, Andrew and Tawny. Thanks so much for all you do. Oh, and guest. I had a quick question. I'm a white man in my late 40s. Grew up in California in the 80s and 90s, and is it racist if my secret favorite YouTube rabbit hole is watching younger black people and other people of color discover Rage Against the Machine lyrics? Is the visceral joy I get of seeing a new generation understand that stuff racist? Thanks. Appreciate it.
I was worried. Cindy, were you worried?
Yeah, I'm like, can somebody just explain that? Like, can we just put it in like layman terms for me? I was like, what was that question?
There's a there's one very popular channel with these two black brothers. I think they're like 18 or something, maybe a little younger, where they, you know, they're like Gen Zers. They've primarily listened to hip hop, I guess, is the conceit. But by now, their whole YouTube channel is them like listening to kind of like white boomery music or like, you know, 80s rock and stuff, and like discovering it and like really liking it. And like, I think then they kind of like take apart what they like about the song. So it's kind of music analysis too. But yeah, I'm happy for those boys. I don't always love the type of white person that's really excited to tell me about that channel.
Yeah.
It feels weird and I can't really explain why. So I think that's what this man is talking about. This, and now I think it's become a subgenre of YouTube.
Yeah.
It's just like black teens being like, yo, listen to this. They're called The Cure.
I think that's basically it. It's like the subgenre is like black kids discover, for lack of a better term, white people shit.
Yeah.
And just like, and the weird thing I think for me is that it sort of strongly implies that there is black people shit that black people need to stick to. And like, it's, I don't know. Cause I think I sort of agree with you. We're just like, every time a white person's super excited about this, I'm like, ooh, this feels wrong.
Feels weird.
But that's what I feel like the difference is. It's like when like these young black teens are discovering this quote like white music or whatever. It's funny. It's like interesting. You're like, oh yeah, like, I didn't. How did they even find this music or whatever? And it's like, it seems explorative. When white people find music or anything, it feels like appropriation. It's like, now it's like, oh no, now this actually exists because I discovered it. It's that like Christopher Columbus mentality. And then it's like, after after you discovered it, now everybody has to know about it. And this is why it goes viral on a platform like TikTok, because now that you've given it the light, now it's of some importance. So it's just, I just think it's different when like, now I want to Google these two little black kids listening to this.
Yeah, I've seen
Cure,
a couple of the videos. I also think it makes me just feel very old, because, and I also, my musical taste is older than I even am, because I'll watch these teens listen to something that I'm just like, oh, well, I have that on LP and I have it in, you know, it makes me feel like, oh, these children, they're just mocking me in my taste. So that's just a personal issue. what do we think about the caller that's his favorite YouTube genre?
Right. Favorite is too much. Favorite means the caller needs to chill.
Do we have like favorite YouTube genres? What's my, I guess my favorite genre is just ad free. Like, what if I'm trying to learn something and there's no ads? That's my favorite genre.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's weird. I'm looking at him sideways like,
Here, can I throw out a tiny thing, which is that when I was a kid, I remember not liking Rage Against the Machine because I was like, this is angry white guy shit. Like, I was like, they are more like Latino than I don't even know that much about them, but right?
Zach's
like,
black. Sorry. Defensive.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
He's half black.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
okay.
He didn't stay in the band. So maybe after he left, you felt like it was white people shit. I don't know.
No, I mean, I think just knowing nothing, I think it's just like guitars, drum and bass, and someone like yelling about like capitalism. I was like, I assume this is white people shit. So,
sure.
So I'm even more ignorant, I guess. So I guess I that is maybe the thing that I'm wondering, right? It's like, does it change anything that, yeah, like the singer is black, or the singer the Rage that I remember is black.
Yeah, I think I was taking the genre of this thing the guy's talking about rather than the specifics, because Yeah, I think if you asked most people, maybe who didn't grow up in that time, they would assume that the band is just like white people shit. But
I mean, I grew up in that time. I just never bothered finding out anything.
I know, Andrew. We've discovered on this show that your tastes growing up were far blacker than mine, which is why I deeply understood who Rage Against the Machine was. And why when someone pitched me to watch Emily in Paris, they had to tell me she's Phil Collins' daughter. And then I was like, ooh, let me see. This says something about us.
Another voicemail? Let's do another voicemail. Fuck it, we got time.
Let's do it.
Hi, all. I am a white-presenting biracial woman, and there was a day where I was picking up my prescription, and the tech said, oh, I like your tan. And I did not know how to respond to that, because the tan is not from the sun. I can guarantee you that. What do you think my response should have been? For context, she did have a British accent, so I don't know if that had anything to do with it. But you know. Anyway, thank you. Love the show. Bye.
I'll just quickly say that I was mistaken to correct you. Zach De La Roca is also Mexican-American. I just always grew up really holding on to the fact that he was part black because I think it helped me. But anyway.
No, I mean,
I just wanted to, before the people come at us on Twitter to say, he's actually this, I just wanted to actually myself. So fuck all you. Sydney, has anyone ever mistaken you for another race that you are not?
You know, honestly, this has happened. I was waitressing at this bar and, you know, I was like a regular, you know, everybody knows Sydney. She's been here for freaking years. And this guy, I had served him all night. I was getting him shots by the pool table. You know, it's a bar. So it's kind of like, it's not the best lit, but lit enough to know that I was a person of color. Like, but well, what he thought I was is also a person of color. But yeah, he came back in the next day and he's like, hey, I wanted to give the waitress more money. She was so awesome. I can't remember her name, but she was Asian. And my manager was like, Maggie? And he was like, no. It wasn't a Maggie. Her name started with an S and she was Asian. And then I was like, no, I don't think I looked Asian last night. But then I was like, you know, this is why you can't give people Patron. Like, it just, it was my fault. I gave him way too many shots and he thought I was Asian.
Oh, that is interesting.
I asked my manager twice. I was like, did he say Haitian? She's like, no, Asian.
See, and that's a different interpretation too. That is you really trying to do some backflips to make it, to justify it a bit. I have had what the caller's describing happen to me exactly because, you know, light skin privilege, you can pass for a lot of things. But I don't know. I guess I always just went like, oh, it's not a tan, I'm black. And just let them stew in their discomfort. You know, I kind of wish that these conversations could be more like, you know, what's just like a neutral correction? You know, you order a latte with oat milk and they go, oh, whole milk? And you go, no, oat milk. And everyone just moves on with their life. Like, if somebody just says like, hey, nice tan, where'd you go on vacation? Just go, oh, I didn't, I'm black. And then everyone can just move on. Like, can we all just be okay? Like, there's no real villain in this story. That woman, she made an assumption. She didn't know. You correct her. Mm-hmm. Who cares? Like,
yeah.
I don't know. Just, I do think it's wild to make any sort of assumption about someone's skin color at all. I think that gets a little strange, right?
I mean, I guess there is the world, too, where just being like, it's not a tan, I'm black, helps it not build up for, because I feel like the thing that has happened, I imagine, to the caller is like, you let it slide a lot, and then one person gets the, no, fuck you! Like, that maybe is not, like, necessary, would be my only thought as, like, a real outsider to this type of conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I was working at a coffee shop once, and it was, like, dead of winter. And, of course, it's Chicago, so I was even paler. I was wearing, you know, very chemically straightened hair. So she's not, like, insane to have thought I was something else, but it was like a regular customer too. And she came up to me and was like, "Where'd you just get back from?" And I was like, "The stock room. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about." And she's like, "You just look so tan and beachy fresh." And I was like, I'm black. I don't know. And I don't know. I think if you just correct them and then don't say anything else, then they just move on and everyone else moves on. I don't know. It doesn't seem like it needs to be a thing, but it does seem like you need to say something.
Yeah. I feel like, I mean, the most experience I've seen, I remember there was like, I think it was like a red carpet where Rashida Jones got asked where, like, "Oh, yeah. Oh, you're tan." And she was like, really fucked with the interviewer for like, you know, for red carpet time, a long time, like 20 seconds, something like that. And it was like, ooh.
I think all she said was like, "Well, you know, I'm ethnic," or like, "You know, I'm..." I think she basically did what we're talking about. I think it just felt like an eternity because in red
maybe
carpet
that.
Times, if you don't like keep the banter light and polite, it feels like a bomb has exploded.
Right.
I don't know. I feel for the caller, like, feeling any type of way about this. I imagine if they're a white presenting biracial person, it's going to happen a lot in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do we have any other advice for them or any other tips?
Yeah, it's just like you said, it's kind of like just address it. And then that's when we go into, well, how do they respond after you address mm-hmm. it?
And, oh, then we can point, yeah.
And then we can really see what this is about. Because for some people, it's an honest mistake. But then, like, if you don't let them know, "Hey, yeah, I'm black," then like they might just think that that's a cool question, cool compliment to anybody and everybody.
Yeah,
just let somebody know, "Hey, for me, that's not a compliment because I am a black woman," you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's actually a really good point, I think, for a lot of things, because so much of our culture and society is like, white is right, is like, you know, white leaning and like fair skin and blonde hair and everything just leans sort of like on the lighter spectrum. I think whenever you can tell someone, "Hey, for me, that's not really a compliment," mm-hmm. I think that's really important because it causes people to realign what they think of as being as perfection, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think about that a lot with like hair stuff. I think about that a lot whenever people are like, "Oh, sorry, my hair's so frizzy." And I kind of want to be like, some of our hair just is frizzy and that's like great. Like, perfectly yeah. smooth hair isn't always the goal for all of us. I don't know. Just, yeah, sticking it to folks trying to give you a compliment can feel nice.
Yeah. I think that's just got to be, that's the advice. That's the advice for the caller. Just let them know.
You know, you can't lose with a, "You look nice." You can't lose with that. That's hey, always.
That's there you
true.
Go.
Yeah.
That's a
yeah,
winner,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Yep. "You look great" is always a good blanket. Mm.
There's mm-hmm. there's certain probably a larger percentage of men than I could that I care to admit who can make "You look great" still harassment. So
okay, that's
you know
true,
what?
That's true.
That's not always.
That's true.
There's ways to do it wrong. There's ways to do it wrong.
If you're not a creep,
yeah.
saying "You look nice" is a great compliment.
Well, Sydney, thank you so much for joining us from your amazingly lit room. It's really like, fucking dope.
It is. My room is lit. Like, it is. It is like a sexy purple, pinkish abyss of cat mom energy, but also sadness. So it's great. I'm having a blast here.
I like that. Perfect, I like look
perfect quarantine nest.
Mm-hmm. If you can't have your sadness with your cat mom energy, what are you even doing these days? You know?
What are you doing? Yeah.
What are you doing?
It's actually a sex dungeon lady den. That's what I call it. So it's complete. I'm actually going to get a lava lamp, but I just wanted to put that on the record here that a lava lamp is on the way. And
oh, nice.
Okay. And we will hold you accountable. Our listeners will mm-hmm. check in with you. Listeners, please reach out to Sydney on the socials. Speaking of socials, I want everyone to look for your cooking show. We did not talk about this up top, but Sid Can Cook was also one of my favorite parts of the pandemic. The basic pitch is what? You feel like you can't cook, so you get your friends to help you cook? I feel like you can cook.
It says Sid can because I can. I'm doing it, but just because you're doing it doesn't mean that you can. So I wasn't cooking before the quarantine happened. And I literally did it because I needed to prove to these bitches that I could. But in every episode, you can see parts of it is like, but can you? You know, you can cook, but you can't read directions. So, yeah. So it's a fun little show. You know, if you want to see things look good and be done in a timely fashion, they got shows for that. But if you want to see, you know, just downright in the kitchen, getting dirty, messy, crazy comments, everyone's being shady and hilarious, and food happens 3 hours later, come on over to Sid Can Cook Insta Live. That's where it's at.
I enjoy it. I feel like Sid can cook. I would never doubt that. I've seen her make things. I see what you make. They look beautiful. I encourage the people to check them out. And the people also need to come and find Hobby Hunter. Mm-hmm. And they also need to find the unofficial expert. Where can they find you online? Give them the places.
Well, like you said, Instagram is my bread and butter. Bread and butter. It's just Sid NYC. Just JustSydBW. And then on Twitter, that's where it's a work in progress and it gets messy and, you know, a lot of grammatical errors. But, you know, people follow me there too. It's just Sid NYC. JustSydNYC.
Sounds good.
Dope.
I feel like we helped people. We solved all of the problems in Hollywood. I feel
we
good.
We did a lot of Hollywood talk this week about it. In a good way. We did useful Hollywood talk instead of stupid Hollywood talk.
The industry never dies. It's always going on, even in our sleep, you know? We can't stop talking.
Industry
about
never
it.
Dies. It might kill us, but it will never die.
That's
it
true.
Will
yes,
win.
Yes.
That's terrifying true. To think about. Well, ooh. Everyone, if you're scared like we are, take a nap. Your dreams will be fine. I don't know. That's it for our show. You can call in 323-389-7223. That's 323-389-RACE. I'm having trouble speaking today. You can at Yo Is This Racist. You can at Trondi Newman. You can at Andrew T. Again, we are not the news. We encourage you to find any racism we may have missed in this episode out in the world. I guarantee it's there for you to discover.
And suboptimalpods.com. Go to... if you want the dumb Hollywood talk, you'll get that often on our other bonus show, Yo Can We Live. Anyway, but yeah, mostly Sid, thank you so much for being here. This was awesome, awesome, awesome.
Thanks for having me. Have me back.
Absolutely. Anytime. We'd love it. Would you like my job, actually? I feel like you would be
No. I honestly have already enough on my plate in my head, so I can't take on anymore.
That's true. Pretty reasonable. I think you need to change your show name to the Hobby Hustler or
Hobby
the Hustler.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. Hobby Drug Dealer. That's what I am.
Right? All right, let us know amazing. How that that basketball card trading goes for you.
I'll let you know.
All right, peace.
Peace. This is suboptimal.